The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by One-Click Upsell from Zipify Apps. And I love One-Click Upsell because it offers an incredible amount of bang for the buck. If you get the app, it's simple enough and powerful enough that you can get it set up and get running in an hour or two, get those upsells in front of your customers. And in return, one in six of your customers are going to spend more with you because one in six people who are offered an upsell through One-Click Upsell actually take it. And that's money that just flows instantly without having to spend more on advertising, without having to go through painful, expensive, timely CRO processes. This is something you can set up and start seeing the fruits of right away. They've helped generate over $150 million in additional revenue for Shopify merchants just like you. So if that sounds interesting, you can learn more about One-Click Upsell and get started with them at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is sponsored by Klaviyo, the leading e-commerce marketing solution for email and SMS trusted by over 50,000 merchants. Why? Because they have a pretty amazing segmentation and customization engine built in to their marketing platform. It lets you send messages based on what your customers have done, what pages they've visited, how much they've spent with you, how much they're likely to spend with you over time with their very cool LTV prediction tool, what products they've purchased or haven't purchased. It's pretty incredible. And in a world where email inboxes are only getting more crowded, people are getting more ruthless, sending highly targeted messages is the only way you're going to be able to cut through the noise. And you can do that with Klaviyo. So if you want to make more money from your flows, from your efforts on email and SMS, check them out. You can start for free at klaviyo.com/ECF. That's klaviyo.com/ECF. Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping seven-figure plus e-commerce brands build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today on the show, I got to be honest, a lot of times I'll usually try to pick a guest and think, okay, what is the angle or the topic that I can have a discussion? What are we going to talk about here that's beneficial to people listening? You know, largely store owners in the trenches, you know, selling stuff day to day, making this work as their primary business. And lots of carryover on this, of course, great takeaways. But if I'm honest, it's kind of a selfish episode because today's guest, Ryan Light, who is the CEO of PistolLake.com, makes my absolute favorite shirts in the entire world. I've been wearing these things for years. I don't know, 3 or 4, maybe even 5 years. I'd say on any given day, you know, probably a 40% chance I'm wearing one of these things. I just love the brand. I love what they've done. And I wanted to learn more about the inner workings of a product I really enjoy and have respect for. And so that's what we do today. We talk about, of course, the shirts, how they designed them. We talk about word of mouth marketing. We talk about hiring CEOs. One of the interesting stories, Ryan didn't found the company, but he was involved with it early on, but the founders kind of brought him in to run the company. And a lot of people I've chatted with, you know, at some point they'd love to have the option to bring a competent CEO in to run their business, but that's a terrifying thing to do. So we talk about what he's learned stepping into that role, what suggestions he has for people hiring a CEO. And we talk about making clothing in America, why that's difficult, the challenges involved in that, and how you market something that on the surface doesn't look that exciting. Because to be honest, I love these shirts, but an image of them doesn't look amazing. It doesn't really hit you until you wear them, you feel them in your hand. The tactile experience of actually using them and getting them, seeing them in person is really what sells it. So how do you sell something like that online when that's so core to the value prop? Anyway, lots of stuff. Fun discussion. Ryan's a great guy, pretty lighthearted, and I really enjoyed it. And I hope you do too. So let's dive in. All right, Ryan. So we're going to talk about shirts and marketing, all sorts of fun stuff. But I think you have to start with the story of how you were, for a rare fleeting moment in time, beating Steph Curry in a game of horse. What's the story there?
Yeah, it was back when I was the creative and marketing director at CoachUp. We had lined up Steph right before he exploded to be our spokesperson. And so we were doing a commercial with him and a bunch of stills and all kinds of great stuff. It was amazing to get to work with him. You know, while the video crew was kind of resetting their lighting and their cameras and stuff, I was like, you know, here's my chance. I'm gonna try and play horse with Steph freaking Curry. And so I've played enough basketball with people that are a zillion times better than me, and particularly horse, that like I've got a couple of like gimmick shots. And so one of them, I'm not a particularly good soccer player, but I can do a rainbow kick, which is where you kind of like roll it up the back of your foot and kind of kick it over your head. So I do a rainbow kick into a layup and I make it, and I'm as surprised as anybody. And Steph just looks at me and he tries it and it didn't work. And so I got a letter on Steph Curry.
Then, oh man, put that on your tombstone.
Right? After that, he demolished me, of course. But there was a brief fleeting moment where I felt like I was somewhat successful at basketball.
That's a really cool story. And so you guys picked him up as a spokesman right before he went huge. I mean, the timing, that's amazing timing, because I mean, he's a pretty coveted name in the advertising world. So just total pure luck.
I wish I could say that we were all smart enough and stuck our heads together and knew that he would ascend from, kind of being a good player into a great player. But he was the guy who made the most sense for our story at Coach Up, which was, that anybody with, the right training can become better. And what Steph's story said was, Steph isn't the biggest guy. He's not the strongest guy. But what he did have is he had his father's resources. His dad, Dell, was also a professional basketball player. And, so he was always around professional players, professional coaches. He was able to really hone his skills. What Coach Up allowed you to do was, kind of democratize that to where anyone had access to that. So Steph's story of being the underdog, the smaller guy with proper coaching really spoke to us. So we chose him over some much bigger names, and we accidentally chose right.
Wow. Well played and well done. It's a great video. It's a hilarious video. We'll link up to it in the show notes. If anyone wants to watch it, highly recommended. So I want to talk about, obviously you're the CEO of Pistol Lake, and I feel, before we started recording, I was just raving about your clothes, and I've been a longtime customer, loved your guys' products. I wear it on a, weekly, if not multi-time a week basis. Yeah. It's an incredible brand. Just, I think my favorite thing about your products are just they're kind of minimalistic. That's very buzzy word these days, but they're not any obnoxious branding. They're super lightweight, but they fit well. They don't, in terms of, you can wear them, if you're traveling, you can wear, I don't think they're wool, but they kind of act, it seems like they act similarly in that you can wear them for 2 or 3 days if you need to in a pinch, or even longer without them just turning into a total reek bomb. Yeah, it's a great product line. Can you give people, apart from my just experience, kind of just a nutshell story of the brand and the arc of the story about how it started and where, how it's come to be where it is today?
Yeah, for sure. One of my best friends, Will Selinsky, started the company in 2012. His goal was to bring manufacturing back to the US and make some really high quality stuff at a reasonable price point in a fit that you would normally only find at like really boutique-y stuff, like really boutique-y shops. They started out just making things out of organic cotton and French terry. Once they kind of proved out that, that the business made sense, that there was, money to be made there, and that there was some product market fit, they got into what they really cared about, which was making a product which became our fabric Uday, which didn't really exist in the market, which was kind of think of it as like a Nike dry fit, but instead of it looking kind of plasticky and like something you only wear to the gym, something that you can make underwear, t-shirts, hoodies, anything out of. So the guys spent this is before my time, and we'll get to this part, but the guys spent 2 years coming up with a proprietary fabric that has all the bells and whistles of a Nike dry fit, but looks and feels like vintage cotton.
I was telling you too, like if I have to go, if I'm like emceeing ECF Live, or I have to go somewhere where I need to look presentable, which is, I usually don't look super presentable. So I got to think about this. My go-to shirt to look like I'm not a total bum is your black Pistol Lake shirt. They dress up really nicely, as well as being super comfortable and casual as well. So how do you create a fabric? I feel like I've heard a lot of people talk about this. Not a lot of people, but a handful of people say that they've got their own proprietary weave. And when you think about creating your own line of fabric, like you mentioned, you alluded to Nike or these big brands, they've got these R&D factories, they can do that. But like, how did two guys that just decide to do this, is it just are there, you go to a place that makes fabric and you just kind of give them the ingredients and just say you want these different, the polyester versus cotton versus the stretchy stuff. You can tell I'm an expert here. Like, I'll just stop talking and let you talk about how it works. How do you make your own line of fabric?
it's experimentation, and it's making friends, convincing places. Like, we have a fabric partner that basically let our founder, William, be kind of a mad scientist in the back of their shop. Like, he told them what the ultimate goal was, and their founder kind of shares kind of some of that mad scientist nature as well, and let him tinker back there for a couple of years. And once he was kind of got it narrowed down to a few choices, we started making prototypes. We started sending those prototypes to friends, family, you know, really our top customers, people that we knew would give us, you know, honest feedback instead of just pat us on the back. That's when we came up with the final formulation. So it was a bit of luck, a bit of, you know, storytelling and telling people what our dream is and convincing them to, you know, let us use their facilities to try to achieve that dream.
You said 2 years. You said he was in the back being a mad scientist for 2 years. Is that kind of like 2 straight years he was back there doing that? Or is that, hey, he'd go in for, you know, a Friday here, a Thursday there, he'd, you know, and kind of back and forth as people, as the factory kind of produced the things he was thinking about? Or was it actually literally 2 years in the back of a hot, sweaty factory somewhere?
Oh, we chained him to the wall. No, it was, you know, on his spare time between running the main portions of the business, he would go and tinker and experiment. And, you know, also like this world changes so quickly, and there's so many different like new technical innovations that happen all the time, that some of it was also like research outside of the actual lab. You know, he'd look around and try to figure out who was doing what and what new fabrics were coming out, what new blends and weaves, and go and see if we could replicate them.
If you're creating a fabric, is it fair to assume that you have different, you know, you've got cotton, you've got polyester. Those are the only two fabrics I can think of off the top of my head. There's lots of other ones. Is it kind of like a pros and cons? You give it a little bit of cotton and you get the softness, but you know, it doesn't dry as well. And versus, is it trying to figure out the perfect blend, pun very much intended, of trade-offs for what you're trying to get to? Is that kind of the big challenge of trying to create something like that?
That's exactly it. Yeah. It's kind of like making a recipe or like a salsa. Like, you know, you maybe you added too much cilantro one time, you know, last time you made it too spicy, this time it was too salty. You just kind of mix it until you get the blend that your palate likes. And then you toss it out to some other people and you see if they dig it.
Interesting. For the record, you can never put too much spice or cilantro into something. I just want to put that out there. Yeah, we'll have to get grub tacos sometimes. So what's the hardest part about making clothing in America? I feel like I'm naming, like, you know, alluding to an HBO show here. But what's the hardest part about doing that? Because everything you guys make is made in the USA, and but from clothing especially, I think that's a pretty rare thing. What's the hardest part there?
The hardest part of it, straight up, is it's the cost. It's tricky to, I mean, there are definitely sweatshops in the US. That's a whole other show. You know, part of our entire being is ethical manufacturing using sustainable materials. And so that means that everybody at our factory gets paid above minimum wage. They all have insurance. They have a job site that is safe. And all of those things come at a cost. You know, if you look at some fast fashion or some competitors, I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus, obviously, you know, they don't have to deal with some of those things. So they can charge $10 for a t-shirt. Our biggest challenge is convincing customers that it's worth more to buy something that's made in the US, where you know that whoever made it actually lives a decent life.
And you guys, it's funny because you guys do that really well. You don't really talk about that a ton on your website. I feel like that's a great benefit. I feel like the shirts, though, even at the price point, like, they're of a uniqueness and a quality level that even if that wasn't the case, I would still pay for them. Is that something, is a lot of brands, though, if they are doing that, they kind of, you know, shout it from the mountaintops, and not in a bad way. I mean, it's a good thing to advertise, but how come is the fact that you guys don't mention it a whole lot or don't talk about it? Is that intentional or is that just, I'm looking in the wrong place?
It's a bit of a balancing act. And, you know, there's a lot of things that we're not nailing on the website. And I think that you touched on one of them, that we're spending a lot of money to manufacture in the US, and maybe we're not hitting people over the head hard enough with it. We definitely feel like it's a fine balance to not come off preachy, but also, you know, sell your value prop. I think that, you know, to your point, we may have gone a little bit too far to the let the product sell itself. And we use our kind of Reddit communities and our social presence and some of our ads and some of the other things to really focus on, you know, the made in America aspect of things. It's tough though, and we're always learning and we're always experimenting with new things.
How do you, again, this isn't a knock on the product, it's clear I love it, but if you're selling your product is one where it really helps tremendously to get the product, to wear it, to feel it, because it's hard to capture in a photograph that it's light, that it's comfortable, that it's soft, and you're at a premium price point. I mean, some of your Henleys are, you know, maybe 70, 80 bucks. How do you do that online? Like, is it mostly word of mouth? I think the reason I made my first order with you guys was word of mouth. Someone really recommended you, but how strong is word of mouth for your business? And then how do you convey that to people online in a medium they can understand? Because that would be really hard.
Yeah, it's definitely tough. And until last year, pretty much word of mouth was 99% of how anyone found us. I think the way that we do is we feel like we really understand our customers and we make a great product that really fits their needs. And we use some kind of unusual tools like Reddit and word of mouth. And our customers actually like rep us without us even asking because they love the product so much. And we do try to tell the story of the brand and why we do what we do, why we built Uday, and why we're solving a problem that we actually legitimately had for ourselves. But it's really tough. Once people touch our product, our repurchase rate is through the roof. When we were able to do pop-ups and small kind of like takeovers, you know, right before COVID hit, we saw some really, really encouraging numbers about, you know, if people touched or tried on the product, they purchased it at an overwhelming rate. So we're really excited for the world to open back up again. You know, just from a digital standpoint, you know, we try to make compelling creative that tells a story, which is expensive. And then we just get our customers to try to be, you know, brand evangelists for us as best we can.
So you said a really good repurchase rate. What's your average repurchase rate of all the customers that come?
If somebody buys something for the first time, they have a 70% chance of buying something else within a year.
That's amazing. That's really good. What about Reddit? You touched on Reddit. How, not a lot of people I think have success or even it's on their radar to try to build community, advertise on Reddit. And I'm guessing advertise is the wrong word because knowing the community, I don't think that probably works super well. How have you been able to build a group of ambassadors and fans, or at least just discussion about your product on Reddit?
Kind of by what you touched on, we make sure that we don't make it feel too much like advertising. We genuinely we ask our customers, you know, what they want, what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong. A really good example is the first new product that we launched after I took over as CEO was underwear. We had never made them before. So we went to our subreddit and we were like, hey, we're going to make some boxer briefs. What do you guys hate about current boxer briefs? What could we do that's a little different? We had like 300 people respond, and overwhelmingly the number one answer was they ride up. And so we made ours a little bit longer than the standard, made them a little bit tighter in the cuff, and we sent them to our top 20 like Redditors and was like, hey, wear these for a month, not straight. That would be weird. Let us know what you think. And they came back with one piece of feedback was that the cuff was a little tight. We loosened up the cuff, sent them out the new prototypes. They were happy. And they became, you know, in less than 2 years, our number one selling product all time. I mean, people buy a little bit more, you buy more pairs of underwear than Henleys or hoodies or whatever. But, you know, a big part of why those sold so well is because we made the product that our customers wanted that they felt like didn't exist in the marketplace. And we kind of take that approach to everything we do on Reddit. You know, we'll give our community, you know, a sneak peek at things a couple days or even a week before it hits the site or before we send out our marketing email. If we don't know even exactly what we're going to do about something, a lot of times in our marketing meetings or in our production meetings, you know, if we come to an impasse and we're like, I don't know if we should make X or Y, we're like, let's ask Reddit. And so I feel like they, in a lot of ways, our guys on Reddit feel like their voices are heard and they're a part of their brand and, you know, they're part of our brand rather. You know, they have some ownership here because what they say will affect what we make.
Yeah. This may be too much information for a public podcast, but I may or may not be wearing Pistol Lake underwear at the moment.
I think as long as you leave the color out, it's not TMI.
Perfect. Okay. I walked the line without falling off. I'm on your subreddit right now. You are Snazzy Mustache. Is that you?
That's me.
You. Okay. You're user Snazzy Mustache, CEO of Pistol Lake. You have your own subreddit. Like, this isn't like people just mention you in the clothing or the travel category. You have your own subreddit. It's got 6,000 members. There's like 20 of them online right now. How do you create your own subreddit? Like, is that, I'm high level familiar with Reddit, been on there a handful of times, done a few things, but is that something that you can just, anyone can hop in, create their own subreddit and you just direct people there? Like, what's the, give us all a sense of how did it get here? Like, is it easy to do? How much curation did you have to do? And what's the process of building your own subreddit with 6,000 members?
Anyone can make their own subreddit. We could make one just about this particular, conversation, but it's getting that many followers took us quite some time. And it's been we've seen a bunch of growth just in the last year and a half. And we were really fortunate. We had about 1,000 followers until about a year ago. And we were really fortunate that we got featured as the featured subreddit of the week for like 2 weeks over the course of a year, like kind of spaced out. And there's really no way to game that. We don't even know how we got selected. Our subscriptions went through the roof during that. And we got a whole bunch of new folks that, had really interesting new viewpoints because they didn't even really, some of them didn't even know what we were. They were like, Pistol Lake, is this a gun subreddit? We even had some guys this was news to me, but there's a large magnet fishing community, which are these dudes who buy really high powered magnets and then throw them into lakes and see what they bring up. And I guess pistol plus lake is really common two words that come up in that. So we converted some customers out of magnet fishing. The way that we did grow it was, just consistently posting. We have a calendar. We ask questions all the time. We legitimately use Reddit's input to steer the company. And also to, if debates ever get to a tie, we go to Reddit for it.
Fascinating. Why Reddit versus a private Facebook group? I know a lot of people in our private community are increasingly so we're starting to build businesses that are powered largely or often entirely based on private Facebook groups. A lot of people are on Facebook and maybe it has to do with the demographic. Why did you pick Reddit versus Facebook?
It's the demographic. Like, I'm a big Reddit nerd. So is Will, our founder. We're really popular with guys like yourself who, are startup guys, tech people who Redditors are our people. And so it felt more authentic for us to go to Reddit versus Facebook. And also on Reddit, people, there's no connection back to who you really are. So whereas on Facebook, you've got pictures of your family and your dog. And so people might not give you their honest opinion. On Reddit, you're anonymous unless you choose not to be. So we get some really unfiltered opinions sometimes, for better and worse.
Are you saying your email address isn't snazzymustache@pistollake.com then? you don't use this handle across the internet?
I do not. Well, no, I do actually use Snazzy Mustache. It's my Instagram. It used to be my company name.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, what's the 60-second story of Snazzy Mustache?
It was Snazzy Mustache Design Studio. I was a web development and design company in Austin that operated for about 10 years. Our biggest customer was Austin City Limits. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, that's cool. I'm teasing you, but it's a way better name than my first internet handle, which was BikeBoy444. So you, I have no room to be giving you a hard time. Hey, it's Andrew here with a quick aside. If you're listening to this episode and enjoying it, then I've got to tell you about our private community for 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brands. The secret sauce, as the name implies, is that everyone inside, we vet everyone to make sure they have real-world experience running an e-commerce brand and struggle with the same kind of things that you do if that's the position you're in. And why is that important? Well, it means you get fast, on-point answers to your most important questions. So if you've got somebody that HR issue and you're worried about letting someone go, but you're worried about a lawsuit or you're trying to figure out the best ERP to implement or maybe you're trying to understand marketing techniques, you can post a message to our form and get answers within hours, sometimes minutes, from experts who know this stuff. You get to plug into an amazing network of e-commerce entrepreneurs worldwide across the United States and the globe that you can connect with when you're traveling for meetups and get invites to member-only events like ECF Live. And then finally, You can avoid costly hiring and software mistakes by tapping into our review directory of over 10,000 reviews for agencies and e-commerce software tools. I mean, it's really hard to find unbiased reviews online right now. So often they're either paid for or they're affiliate links. All of our reviews are completely unbiased. So when you go down the road of hiring a new ad agency or looking for that new, you know, ERP software, you have a lot more confidence that you're not going to be wasting the next 3 or 4 months of your life on an expensive project. So if that sounds interesting to you, come join us. You can learn more and apply ecommercefuel.com, and we'd love to have you inside. All right, let's get back to the discussion. Talk a little bit about creative. Like you mentioned, some of the creative that you put together, it's really challenging to do. And I think you were mentioning probably, when you referred to creative earlier, were you talking mostly about the creative that you do for the website, like just the product photos or for Facebook or for all of the above?
All of the above, yeah.
All of the above. Okay. And what's hard about the creative process and creating creative for your brand?
I mean, there's a ton. Somebody can't touch and feel a photo. You know, somebody can't try on a photo. And so much of what we do is about fit, or, you know, how soft the fabrics are, or how well they perform or breathe. So what we try to do is we try to tell stories with our creative. You know, we try to give little snapshots into, you know, things that we like, places in LA that we like, you know, adventures that we like. We try to be a little aspirational for it. But then there's also, you know, replicating color on, you know, a shirt that somebody took a photo of in midday, and then now it's on a website and somebody gets it at their house, and now it's, you know, in their hands, and it doesn't look exactly the same. It's a challenge for any brand that is primarily, you know, digitally native to try to communicate to someone who's just using their eyeballs on a laptop whose brightness might be at 50% and they don't realize it, you know, what they're getting. So we try to do our best with our words and our photos to let you know what is going to arrive at your doorstep if you order from us.
I want to talk a little bit about, you know, and we're already 25 minutes into the interview, and this is what I was hoping to focus on. So, but you're a good conversationalist here. It's my fault for not keeping us more on track, but I don't regret it. You're the CEO of the company, and you had some friends that founded it, or a friend that founded it. And I know you were kind of involved potentially in some of those early stages, but you moved from Boston out to California. There's a lot of people listening, I think, that own e-commerce stores that would love to be able to do something like that. Maybe they're at a point where either they're ready for the next thing, or maybe they want to be able to focus on a part of the business that isn't being the CEO, and they want to bring someone in to help run that. But A, it's terrifying. B, it's really hard to find good people that can do that. And you've been doing this for 3 years well, and obviously it's been working out well. Maybe at a high level, can you talk about what were the circumstances where you found yourself taking over from the founders as the CEO? What did that look like? And particularly also, not just from your situation, but from the situation of the founders, what was that environment like?
Yeah, so I met William, our founder, in Boston. I had briefly moved to Boston from Austin to participate in the Techstars program in 2011. He was in a previous class with a different company. The Techstars community there is pretty close, as it is in most places. And met William. We both liked basketball. And so we started playing basketball together. We became roommates briefly. And we just were always talking startup stuff, marketing, email, design, you name it. And we became really close. And, you know, he watched how hard I was working on my company, which was called Convey. And, you know, I helped him out a lot early on with, you know, some branding ideas, some design stuff. We could tell that we vibed. He moved out to LA to start Pistol Lake. We stayed in really close touch. I was a, you know, unofficial advisor to the company when he would need some help on, hey, should we do this or that? I was an early backer of the company. I put some money in early on. I loved the clothes, the mission, all of that. And I just, we stayed in touch. And then, you know, I came out to LA to work on a completely different project. I crashed with Will, and he was talking to me about how he wanted, you know, to work on the portion of the business that he was really passionate about, which was, you know, the production and the design and the fabrics. And he kind of put the bug in my ear that he might be looking to move over and that I might be a good fit. You know, I'll admit that early on, I'd never sold a physical product before. I was like a software web developer, you know, platform guy like CoachUp. And so I didn't really think that I wasn't sure that I would be a great fit for it. But over the course of talking to him and talking to other people about the company and talking to some of their customers, I got really excited about it and he got really excited about me. So it was just kind of one of those things that, you know, from a business network like Techstars and, you know, keeping in touch on a friend basis, it just worked out.
And how do you, I think one of the things that if people find the right person for that role on a fit basis, on a skills basis, how do you, I think that the hardest part for some people is how do you structure a compensation package for that? Because you want to make something where it's attractive to someone competent enough like yourself, highly competent to run the show, while also keeping interests aligned in terms of, you know, just the long-term interests of both the CEO and the owner. So how did that conversation go with you and Will? How is it set up now? If you're comfortable sharing, I think it'd be super helpful for people to know.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the way that it came about was we were both open books about it. I wouldn't want the company to have to go do something that would injure its future just to get me. Like, I didn't want them to have to go raise a round of funding just to bring me in. So my compensation package is really highly equity and performance driven. That really appealed to me because it was asking me to like bet on myself, and it de-risked things a bunch for William as well. I was new to the apparel space and, you know, I was new to the e-commerce space. I was a little bit of a question mark. You know, I thought I could do it, but I didn't have like a laundry list of wins to show William to be like, look at dude, I did this, 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 and this. So I was kind of like like a veteran running back in the NFL that, you know, I was like, dude, I can still do it. You know, give me a bonus if I get 1,000 yards. So that's the way we worked it out. If I performed, I got paid. If the company did well, I did well. And I think that was a really easy way to know that for Will that I was in it for the right reasons.
Yeah. On a structure basis, and of course, not the specific dollar amounts aside, not talking about those, but is it set up two things? Are you set up in terms of, you know, cash payments, bonuses? Is it equity like option grants? Is it a profit share? And then what are the things that trigger those? Is it a couple of things there. What are the triggers and what are the KPIs that all that's based off of?
It's almost all structured around profitability. And so we structured it initially for growth. And then kind of my second round of bonuses, which is both equity and cash bonuses, is around profitability. And the thinking there was early on when you're trying to grow a company that was like Pistol Lake, where all the hard stuff was done, you might need to do some stuff that doesn't scale infinitely to get some new eyeballs and some new customers in the door. And that makes sense. And then after that, you need to make sure that the decisions that you're making are going to keep you in business. Because if all you care about is growth numbers, I'll go out and spend $1 million on Facebook and I'll grow the company, but I'll run us into the ground at the same time. So we kind of staggered the two around what we thought were the biggest goals for the business.
What, you know, if you've got someone looking to hire a CEO for their business, they've been in it for 5 years, they've run it for, you know, they need to take a break, do something else, but they need someone competent to come in. From your seat, coming in as a CEO, what would you recommend for someone that founder looking to hire and bring someone in that we haven't maybe talked about so far?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a little biased here, so I'll just talk about kind of what I would look for. Like, I'd look for like indicators of their leadership skills. Have they like built or fostered a culture before? I would go and talk to people that they worked with and worked for before. And I would be earnest and be like, yo, I'm thinking about turning over the keys to my business, which I put my blood, sweat, and tears into, to this person. And I'd love to know how you really feel about them. Find out if they're a hustler, if they're a self-starter, all those things. They probably wouldn't have made your shortlist if they weren't. But I would really want to get to know them as an entrepreneur and find out if they have like a curious mind in general. I think that stuff is way more important than if they have industry-specific knowledge. That stuff can kind of be learned on the job, in my opinion. But being a good leader and knowing how to maintain a good culture isn't something that you want them learning on the job. That kind of needs to be kind of in the pocket already. Something that we do that I would suggest anyone do too is to do like a trial period on the DL. What William did was really smart, in my opinion. We tested each other out in the role for 3 months before we made the announcement public. Like, it would have looked really bad for me if I went from, you know, like marketing and creative director to my first role as a CEO and you know, I get fired in 3 months. And it would have looked really bad for Pistol Lake too. they might have had a harder time, you know, getting, it's already hard to get a CEO in, which you kind of alluded to. But if you've got somebody that only made it 3 months, the next person might be worrying about why the last guy didn't work out. And, you know, for me, if I was going to try to be a CEO somewhere else, it'd be like, dude, you didn't even last 3 months at the last place. What happened there? So it was good for both of our interests to make sure that we were both happy with things before we kind of like banged the drum on it.
Yeah, that's great. Great point. What recommendations do you have for someone stepping into that role? Like, you know, as you, for that 3 months and beyond, lessons learned from some of the best things that you did and some of the most egregious mistakes that you made?
I'll try to focus on the good stuff, but we'll get in. So I think something that William and everyone at Pistol Lake did to kind of help me get my feet wet was that they made sure that I got to know every part of the business. Like, I ran customer service for my first couple of months, so I could really get to know our customers and their pain points. I went to a warehouse sale, I chatted with customers, and I didn't really tell them exactly who I was. I looked back through years of Reddit posts. I feel like that really gave me a crash course in the company, the brand, and that was better than any onboarding documentation that you could hand a new employee. I'm not even sure that there's like a handbook that you can hand to an incoming CEO that would really cover it all. There's a lot of trial by fire, and there's a lot of on-the-job learning. And then kind of on the culture and people side of things, like, you're kind of this new guy, you're a question mark. Like, are you going to clean house? Are you going to fire people? Are you going to change the culture? Are you going to be a jerk? So I just tried to be patient and empathetic, get to know the team. I didn't try to build Rome in a day, or else I might have burnt it down. I didn't want anybody on the team to be like, who the F does this guy think he is? Like, I didn't want to roll in guns blazing to try to do a zillion things at once. I just tried to be patient and gain trust first and let the team know that I was there to help and to grow the business and that we all had the same goal.
Very cool. Ryan, well, we got to start wrapping things up here pretty quickly. But before we put a cap on the episode, are you up for doing a fast lightning round here?
Let's do it.
Great. Favorite piece of e-commerce tech?
It's got to be Shopify. I used to be a web designer and developer, so having something that just works for me and has tons of plugins that I don't have to worry about is just amazing.
Nice. Least favorite piece of e-commerce tech?
I can't find a digital asset management tool that is good and isn't a zillion dollars. Like, we have this really hacked together version of Flickr and Google Drive that's 100% not optimal. So if anybody knows something, hit me up. For the love of God.
We'll put your Twitter in the show notes, then get a hold of you. Favorite basketball team or player?
Oh, that's tough. I mean, I'm a Texas guy, so the Mavs are my number one. But I've only played basketball with Steph Curry, so I'm going to have to go with Curry being my favorite, but the Mavs being my team.
That's a good spread right there. What's one of your fondest memories from childhood?
My mom was a flight attendant for 46 and a half years. If you leave out the half, she'll correct you. So we got to travel quite a bit. And instead of Christmas presents, we always went somewhere for Christmas. And we flew standby because we flew for free. And I would just have to sit next to a stranger. And I was a really chatty kid. So sometimes I'd make new friends with 80-year-old guys when we landed. And so I'd have a lot of stories to tell my family about my new friends that I met.
Oh man, I feel like we need to do a follow-up episode just on your travel adventures with your mother and family. That's amazing. What's been the most effective marketing strategy for you in the last 6 months?
I feel like it's going to be the most effective marketing strategy always. And that's just really get to know the customer and make what they want and ask them what you're doing right and ask them what they're doing wrong and base your marketing decisions off of those interactions.
Yeah. Do you guys, side question here, I should ask this in the main one, but how much paid spend do you do? We've already talked about some of the challenges of advertising when a premium priced product, it's hard to really, you know, get behind until you actually feel an experience. Do you guys do a lot of paid advertising?
We started in 2020, and before that, really barely any. It was less than $5,000 a year. Last year, we did about $20,000. And based on what we're selling, things look pretty good.
Yeah, I can imagine it for the brand you've built. That's very little money. Favorite item that you sell on the website? So we'll link up to it. What's your, of all the Pistol Lake stuff, what's your favorite?
This one's kind of a mix. My favorite item is one of our minimalist tees with somebody else's logo on it. And so being like a tech startup guy, I've ordered crappy swag for every single company that I've ever worked for. And we get these, sometimes we just get these Hanes beefy tees. You know, everybody that we give them to tosses them out. They end up in a landfill or in a Goodwill, you know, within the first 6 months. We make really high quality startup and, you know, company logoed gear that people actually want to wear. And so I feel like that we're saving junk from ending up in a landfill. And we're also helping out companies, you know, make swag that people actually want to wear so they get their impressions and that people are actually like, when you hand it to somebody, you're like, hey, this is made of recycled water bottles and eucalyptus. How cool is that? So it's also a conversation piece. So we dig making corporate gear for other companies.
I'm going to have to keep that in mind because there is, as someone who's run a number of conferences, it is difficult to come up with good swag. And there is so much bad swag that does not even make it to the airport that just gets tossed. What was a major and or seminal moment or period in your life that really shaped who you are today?
I think it's got to be the first time I went through Techstars. I say the first time because I've been through twice now. We took Pistol Lake through Techstars 2 years ago. But, you know, in 2011, I was pretty green. I didn't really fully understand, you know, like what a VC was, what real startup hustle was. You know, I didn't have a network that was powerful. And, you know, I also met William in Techstars and I met my fiance in Boston. And so had this little software side project that me and a couple of buddies from the University of Texas, had we not gone to Techstars with that thing, my life would be completely different today.
Interesting. And Techstars, for people who don't know, similar to Y Combinator, is that fair? It's kind of an accelerator program where they take a little bit of equity, invest, and you kind of go through a process with a group of other entrepreneurs.
Nailed it.
Yeah, very cool. Well, sir, so fun talking to you about this. Of course, longtime fan of the brand. It's great to dive into it a little bit, get to know you better. If this clothing sounds interesting, or even if it doesn't, take my word for it. It's super good stuff. PistolLake.com, just the best t-shirts and the best, especially long sleeve shirts that I own, they make. So check them out. Just give them some love and some business over there if it's something you'd wear, because I guarantee you won't regret it. So Ryan, thank you so much for talking. This has been a lot of fun, and I really respect what you guys have built over at the company.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure.
Thanks so much for listening. And the fact that you made it to the end of the episode tells me you're probably someone interested in this stuff and might be a really good fit for the e-commerce fuel community. Our community is the world's largest group of 7- and 8-figure e-commerce store owners and offers a value-packed form, dynamic live events, and much more. If that sounds interesting at all, you should learn about membership and how to apply at ecommercefuel.com. Big thank you to our two sponsors. Supercharge your email marketing efforts with Klaviyo, the world's best email and SMS marketing engine at klaviyo.com/ECF. And also one-click upsell from Zipify Apps, where you can rapidly increase your average order value by offering powerful targeted upsells. You can get started with them at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. Finally, thanks to Sherelle Torricampo for helping produce the show. Work hard, adventure often, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
This is the ASY Radio Network live from New York.